It is Veterans Day in the United States. Thank you to our veterans and active duty service members. Thank you to the families. Art Whitnick, great friend of the program. We've had him on so many times. He was drafted into the U.S. Army in 1968 at the age of 19 and then went on to serve with the 101st Airborne Division in the Vietnam War. And he's going to tell us the story of the famous battle for Hamburger Hill. But it's going to be a recording. The reason why he's not with us today is because he's suffering and fighting ALS. And I always thought this was a genetic thing, but this also affects athletes, service members. And Ruth spoke to him, and he was having a hard time just breathing and getting through it. He wanted to come on. He was willing to try it, and we just couldn't do it to him. So, Art, we're all thinking of you, my brother.
Yeah.
Godspeed, man. This is one of the many times we spoke to Art. This was May of last year on the 55th anniversary of the Battle of Hamburger Hill, and I started by asking him, why do they call it Hamburger Hill?
Well, it started off, this was a 10-day battle. It started off as just a search and destroy kind of a mission, because this hill overlooked a main artery of the Ho Chi Minh Trail where the enemy was bringing supplies in. As we approached this hill, we were getting shot at and, you know, forced back. So we'd fired some artillery in there, bring more guys in, and kept attacking. It took 10 days to take this hill.
But the How big of a hill?
937 meters, which is almost just under 3,000 feet.
Okay. Like a mountain.
That's a big hill.
That's a mountain.
Yeah, that's a hill. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was called Hamburger Hill because the guys there thought it was a meat grinder. Because so many, we lost 65 or 68 young men in the battle and over 300 wounded. And so that's why they dubbed it, the soldiers dubbed it Hamburger Hill.
Yeah.
Well. And what day did you, you had to climb that hill?
Yes, I did. Oh. And that was on the final day, the final assault, May 20th. And by that time, we had almost, to give you an idea how big this battle was, we had almost 700 people surrounding the base of it, and we all attacked at once.
Wow.
So it's a huge, major operation.
Wow.
And one of the things that people don't realize is before we attacked for that final attack or final assault, we were told to fix bayonets, you know, put our bayonets on in case.
This means it's going to be close and personal.
It's going to be close and
brutal.
Personal. And we were also told not to take any prisoners. Now, for me, if you got a guy who raises his hands, just shoot him.
Wow.
We're not taking any prisoners that day. And that doesn't, you know, that's hard to
tough,
register.
Man.
Yeah.
That is hard to register.
Yeah.
That's tough. How old were you?
I was 20. And I was a squad leader in charge of.
Yeah, that's.
I just want to say you're basically a baby. But
yeah.
I mean, you're not a baby, but you look
high school,
look, you're just out of high school.
Yeah.
You look at the face of a 20-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Wow.
And I was in charge of 12 guys who were all in their late teens. So, when you think about it, just like you said, we're just out of high school. And a lot of us are draftees. We didn't want to be there, but our country called and we went.
So, here you go, up the hill.
Yeah. So, I go up the hill, and the first thing that happened to me, because I had my sergeant stripes on, I was told ahead of time to take the stripes off because the enemy was picking on the leaders. Well,
yeah.
I didn't believe that. I thought, that's a bunch of hooey. So, but it wasn't, because I was getting shot at. Everywhere I moved, somebody was shooting at me. So I finally got into a bomb crater, and I'm trying to peek over the top and see what I can see.
Well, can you just picture yourself being 20 years old? And you're hiding now
right.
Where a bomb went off
right.
and blew a hole in the dirt.
Right.
And this is where you're hiding.
In a foreign country, you don't even know.
Right.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going to take cover in this hole in the ground that was made by a bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mean to laugh, but you guys make it sound so simple. But
I'm trying to point out is it's hell.
Yeah.
It's hell on earth.
Yeah.
You know, one day you're in high school and you have a girlfriend, you're worried about Saturday night, and then the next thing you know, you're in a foreign country.
Being shot at.
Surrounded by people who you were just talking to, but now they're dead on a hill. Mm. You're climbing the hill, and it's just like a scene. It's a horrible scene out of a movie where it's just explosions and shooting and...
Yeah. That's real.
You're absolutely right. But what happens is your mind goes into your training kicks in, and now it's I have to assault this hill. I have to take the objective. So your brain is in another location or another mindset, So I'm in this bomb crater. I'm looking for a target. I don't see anything. I finally see a guy running. I take a few shots at him. I don't know if I hit him or not. And then when I poked my head up, something blinded me. And I reached up to protect my eyes, and then I got hit in the chest with something.
Ooh.
And I didn't know what the heck it was. I was knocked backwards. And I'm laying there, and I'm thinking, oh, crap, you know, my chest is killing me. My eyes are stinging. I said, this is it. I'm dying. This is the end of me. And while I'm laying there, I was able to start to see a little bit better. So I got whatever was in my eyes out, and I looked at my chest, and I'm on fire.
Oh.
What had happened is an enemy soldier shot a tracer at me, and his first round came in and hit the dirt in front of my face and blasted dirt in my eyes. The second round hit all my equipment, and that was a tracer, and that sat there burning, but I couldn't see because my eyes were full of dirt.
And a tracer is so everyone else firing on your position can see where you are.
Exactly.
They can follow the tracer round. It's a very bright round.
Gotcha.
This hits you and just... Your chest is on fire now.
Right.
And my equipment's on my... You know, I had cloth bandoliers wrapped around my chest. So it didn't have enough power to penetrate. Maybe it ricocheted off of something. I don't know. But whatever it did, it landed there, started my bandoliers on fire. And, of course, I'm blind, temporarily blinded. And then when I saw the fire, I beat the fire out. I said, holy crap. I mean, this is so real now. Someone is actually shooting at me. Why not? What's wrong with those guys? You know?
Yeah. For God's sake.
Yeah, you're a target.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I jumped up and I yelled to my guys, follow me. We're going this way because I saw a little area that had some cover. There was some boulders and some fallen logs and a little bit of scrub brush. So I ran up that way. And my adrenaline just took over, and I ran up all the way up to the top of the hill. And I'm jumping over these abandoned enemy positions. I'm not paying any attention to what's going on to my left or right because I'm thinking my guys are right behind me. We're all going up. We're going to get to the top, and we're going to, wipe out anybody who's up there. Well, I get all the way up to the top, and I go to turn around to tell the guys, well, here's what we're going to set up, and there's nobody there.
Whoops.
Yep.
Guys.
Guys.
There he goes.
Guys.
I'm going to wait here and see what happens.
Where the hell did everybody go?
They just saw you, but they probably thought you were killed, and then you got up and ran up the hill. And
bolted, like, yeah.
What is going on here?
So I'm sitting there. I got there, and now the adrenaline rush had gone, had evaporated. So I said, oh, now what do I do? So I can't go back down. I might get shot at. So by my own guys. So I just got behind a stump, and I waited and waited and hoped that no enemy soldier came along because I barely had any strength to lift my rifle. But as the battle died down pretty quickly after that. I don't know if I wanted to brag, I could say, yeah, I scared everybody away, but that's not what happened.
Right.
But finally the guys started coming up the hill, and they looked at me, and I looked like Alice Cooper. I didn't realize what I looked like because I had the dirt in my eyes, and I had a big burn mark in my center of my chest. And they said, gee, Sergeant Wicknick, what happened to you? I said, where the hell were you guys?
Seriously. Well, you're behind me. You would have seen what happened.
Didn't you see?
Right.
So I said, follow me. And they're all like shrugging their shoulders and stuff and going, whoops.
Our bad.
So anyhow, So I told him, I ran up here, I there was a little bit of cover, and you guys should have followed me. We might have made a difference. Shortly after that, the battle died down quite a bit. But there was a lot of explosions and firing going on in different areas, but nothing really right in our immediate area. I think the enemy had left that spot.
Wow. Oh, man. Well, looking around that hill, and it had to be pretty dramatic after.
Well, if anyone had seen the movie Hamburger Hill, they did a pretty good job for on the terrain with the smoke and the firing and how steep the hill was and what it was like to climb that thing. And at the very end of the movie, there was a little sign that said, "Welcome to Hamburger Hill." There was no such sign. What was there was somebody took a piece of cardboard and wrote Hamburger Hill. Was it worth it? And so that gave us a little reflection looking at that sign. Yeah, was this worth it? 65 guys got killed here and over 300 wounded. And in the movie, there was a guy standing there at the very end looking down at the hill with tears in his eyes. And I did the same thing. I stood there and I looked down at the hill and all this death and destruction, and the place stunk of rotting flesh and of cordite, with the results of gunpowder. And I said, how the hell did we ever survive? How did I survive this? So that's when I made up my mind that I don't care what I do the rest of my tour in Vietnam, I'm going to come home. I'm going to survive. If I can get shot in the face and shot in the chest and not be seriously injured, I'm going to make it home. And I did.
We're glad you did.
Yeah, man.
And we're glad you told the story.
Yeah.
And we're going to link up to your book, Nonsense, Surviving the Vietnam War with the 101st Airborne Division. Thank you so much for coming on and telling that story year after year. Yeah. We love you, man, and thank you. Thank you is not enough.
No.
But it's all we have.
Yeah.
Thank you, Art.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Art.
Art Whitney. We got to get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me and you. It's Veterans Day. Thank you to our veterans and active duty members.
Thank you.
If you want to call in a story of serving or of a family member who served, 203-882-9757. And don't be shy. This usually takes a little while to go because service members don't want to talk on themselves, But you can talk about, your group, your crew, Or you could talk about your dad who served or your mom who served, mm-hmm.
A funny moment that happened.
A funny moment. A lighter side of serving.
Yeah.
203-882-9757. Didn't you have one? Was it your dad?
No, it was my Uncle Anthony, my dad's favorite uncle, served in World War II. And they were going through a bombed-out village. There were Germans there as well as, American soldiers. And they were trying to find all the Germans. So I came upon this building. My uncle's walking along the wall of one building, looking around for German soldiers. He gets to the corner. Unbeknownst to him, on the other side of that corner was a German soldier doing exactly the same thing as him. They both get to the corner, they come face to face, and both of them throw their hands up and drop their rifle. Clunk, they're both like, My uncle luckily looks down, sees his rifle, grabs it, and takes the guy prisoner. Turns out the guy didn't want to be in the war. You've had to go. They actually ended up becoming friends.
Wow.
And they basically used to write each other, at least once a week until he passed away.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny. They both at the same time dropped their rifles, put their hands up.
That feels like a cartoon, like a Sunday morning cartoon it in does. Like, yep. The newspaper.
Yeah.
They got the guns that go off.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ben in New Haven.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
Hey, pretty good. I just wanted to share something really, quick and really funny about my great uncle, who's a veteran.
Cool.
Sure.
So, it's something my mom told me. So, he was serving, just he was in America. It was during World War II, and he was delivering newspapers on base. He fell and broke his leg, and they gave him a Purple Heart for getting injured while on active duty.
Wow.
Yeah, so he literally got a medal because he delivered papers.
Nice.
That's cool.
Why not? I won't say nothing.
Yeah, that's it's a tough one when someone says, "How did you get that medal?"
Yeah.
Next question.
Someone pushed me. Right.
Why? How'd you get your medal?
What was that sound in the background? Is that a baby?
No, that was my cat.
Oh.
That was Marshall. Marshall makes a noise when he poops.
Marshall was just pooping during your story, Ben.
That's awesome. My cats are probably doing the same thing at home right now.
All right, Ben, thank you for the story, brother. Appreciate it. It's Veterans Day, and we're asking veterans or active military service members or family of to call in a story of serving. 203-882-9757. Governor Lamont at the top of the hour. Bob in Waterbury.
Good morning, Chaz. Good morning, fellas.
Hey, good
ladies.
Morning.
Morning.
How we doing?
Good.
I had a brother who joined the Marines when he was 17. He was gung-ho.
Wow.
Served 4 years in the Marines.
So he had to fake his age? Did he have to...
No. Back in the day, if you had a parent sign, you could go in. They were hurting for people. Right. So as long as you had mom or dad sign,
what
you
year
were
was
able
this?
To go in. Oh, I'm not certain to tell you the truth.
Decade?
Probably, 68, 69.
Oh, okay. I could see why they'd have a shortage.
Right.
Yeah. They had the draft come around and everything. They had the lottery for that. He served his 4 years, came home, never mentioned it. 61, 10 years ago, he passed away, and we were getting everything together with the funeral director, and he did some research and found out that he served a tour in Vietnam and never told mom or dad. Wow. He told mom and dad that he went to Japan for cold weather training. Yep. And he did that so that they wouldn't have to worry about him.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and he kept it a secret, and he had a tough life. He came back hooked on heroin, like many of the soldiers did. Family didn't want him, didn't care for him. But when they realized at the funeral what had gone on with his life, things took a big turn.
Right, new respect.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so you never know.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of them came back and didn't want to talk about it. They would just sit in their chair and watch TV and just be quiet around the family and just never talk about it.
Yeah, and we hooked up with Cambodia, and we were allowing heroin to flow freely, and that's how so many soldiers came back. They had tombstones in their eyes because they were hooked on heroin.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and my brother spent 50 years rambling with that.
What was your brother's name?
John.
Well, thank you, John, wherever you are. Bob, thanks for calling, brother. Appreciate it.
I thank you. All right. And thanks to all the veterans.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Erica in Terryville.
Hi, everybody. I also just want to say thank you to the veterans. Thank you for the sacrifice.
Yes, hear, hear.
So I had a client whose husband actually took photos of the bomb being dropped in World War II.
Which one? Hiroshima or Nagasaki?
I think it was Nagasaki. It was the Enola Gay.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Famous plane, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she didn't know until he passed away. And they were married for many, many, many years. Like since they were in their, 19, 20 years old. And he passed away when he was 89. So
wow.
Yeah. So she just had, you know, like official members of the federal government show up to her door after he died with, you know, like awards and certificates and, you know, telling her like who her husband was. And she had no idea. So it was just, it was mind blowing. I mean, you know, so many veterans do so much and they see so much and they come home and they don't talk about it. And
they don't complain. They don't want sympathy.
Yeah.
Right. They just go about their lives.
Yeah.
And I mean, this man went on to do amazing things with his life. He was a semi-pro golfer. He was one of the people in the first room. He was a Harvard grad. He was one of the people in the first room when they turned on, like, the first computer that took up a whole room. I mean, I've had conversations with this man. He was so intelligent and so well-versed, and no one knew this about him, you know? So it's just, it's wild. Like, you just never know.
Almost like a Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
You know, that he had this amazing life after, and he was there for the computer, the first computer being turned on. Semi-pro golf player. Pretty incredible. Thank you, Erica.
Yeah, very incredible. So thank you to our veterans. And please, I also know a ton of people that work at the VA. Like, our veterans do not get enough support. So anytime you're out anywhere, especially this season, if anyone that has to do anything with the veterans is asking for help, donation, please do whatever you can. Like, they need us. They need us.
Yeah.
Well said. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have
All right,
day.
Erica. Mike in Southington.
Hey, good morning, guys. Mike Scavetta here, United States Air Force veteran.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, appreciate you guys doing this so much. Quick story for you. I was about 17 when 9/11 happened. I went to Weathersfield High School. I remember walking home that day. You didn't hear a plane in the sky. It was just an eerie silence. So when I got home, my grandparents were my guardians. I said, would you sign for me to follow in your footsteps? It's something I need to do. He signed for me, and a year later, I shipped out, went to basic, went to military police school, and I was boots on the ground. I would say within 9 months of leaving basic training, did about three tours. And it was the best thing I ever did. I just knew that day that, you know, we couldn't be messed with like that. We had to fight for freedom, and it was something I had to do.
Wow. Where did you serve? Were you in Afghanistan?
Yeah, Kandahar, Afghanistan was my last tour. That was the Wild West. It was pretty cool. We operated out of an old Taliban headquarters. So what had happened is the previous unit that came in had run the Taliban out of their headquarters. So kind of as a trophy, we set up our command post there. So we kind of sat on top of the roof, and we'd look out, and it was kind of a big middle finger to them.
Man, cool. That, you know, you say the Wild West so casually, but what it really means is that it was nuts. Like, anything could happen at any time. You didn't know who was for you, who was not for you. You didn't know if that trash on the side of the road was going to blow up in your face. It was pretty gross. Not to mention the huge spiders.
Yeah. Oh, God, the camera spiders.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the scariest things out there is the IEDs, the improvised explosive devices. You don't know where they are because they're from the old Soviet war. So, you know, they would have these third country nationals, they call them TCNs, and they'd go out, and their job was to, I don't know how I got the short stick on this, but their job was to clear the minefield. So every so often you'd hear a loud bang and say, oh, there goes another TCN. They literally would go poking around and clearing out minefields.
How long were these sticks?
I didn't get close enough to look, I'll tell you that.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Hey, AJ, take this stick and go out and find some mines.
You do it.
Poke the sand till it explodes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I quit.
I'm good. Can I peel potatoes? I think I'd rather do that.
I'm with the spiders and stuff.
Being in the Air Force, did you meet any, like, Top Gun type people?
Yeah, you know, when you're overseas and you're on a unit like Kandahar, first we were under NATO's command, so we served with units from all over the world, the Royal Air Force, the Danes, the South Koreans. So I made friends all over the world that I still talk to.
That's
one good thing about social media is I could watch their families grow. I could watch their accomplishments. And the biggest thing is this. If I notice there's struggles, which I've lost many from the unit, I can check in on a buddy and do
good
a wellness check,
man.
Because, you know, that's one thing. If I could shed light on anything for anybody listening today, 22 a day, 22 veterans a day do kill themselves, if not more, and they struggle with some severe demons. I've lost quite a few brothers and sisters to that. So that's the one good thing about social media in this aspect is we can check on our buddies because, you know, it's there's some dark places you go back to, and it's important that we get the mental health care to the veterans that need it.
Man, what a great way to finish up that call. Mike, thank you for your service and your continued service to veterans. Thank you, brother.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good day.
Thank you. It's Veterans Day. We thank all of our veterans, our active service members, and their families. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR. Folks are calling in stories of service from family members or themselves. Cousin Lurch in Hamden.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. You don't sound like a Lurch.
Well, if you saw me, you'd understand. I'm like 6'5", so they've been calling me that for years.
Okay. I got it.
Right on. So I figured I'd give you guys a funny story, lighten the mood.
Cool.
So I served... early 90s, I was in the National Guard. And
then
in the mid-90s, I went active duty, and I was in the 75th Ranger Regiment.
Ooh.
And I didn't realize it at the time, but I was going to the unit that was part of Black Hawk Down. Like, I got there afterwards, but that's where I was down at Fort Benning. And so it's a pretty hardcore unit, as you can imagine. So the first day we got assigned there, they called everybody out into the hallway. And he's like, all right, get down in a push-up position. Start pushing. And while we're sitting there doing push-ups, there's like a dozen of us. One of the guys goes down the line and puts a 3x5 card in front of our face. And he's like, when that card is soaked with sweat, we'll know you're serious about being here.
Oh. Wow.
Oh, no. Could you put your knees down?
Here's the funny part. I sweat like a bookie at the Super Bowl. Like, if it rained in Africa like I sweat, there'd be no drop. So by the time, like, my car was filled in, like, just a couple of minutes. And so they're like, all right, you can get up now. It's like, whoo, thank God. All right.
Thank God for sweats.
Thank God for overactive glands.
Yeah, I'd be spitting on that.
Man, that's the one time it paid off. But I still can't believe I did it. I mean,
are you the kind of guy, like, if I shook your hand, would I be like, ooh, wetness?
Oh, the wet handshake, yeah.
No, okay. Not all the time.
Okay, just when you're exhilarating yourself.
Right.
Oh, dude, well, I mean, well, down there, it's like, you know, 98 degrees and 90% humidity in the winter, so, you know.
Ah, brother.
Middle of Georgia.
Easy, yeah.
How many, what's the most push-ups you've ever done or saw someone do?
Oh, God, there were guys, like, you know, I think 120, 130 was the most, as soon as I do it once.
Yeah, that's like those guys with no necks.
Yeah, they could do a one-handed push-up. Exactly. Yeah.
The one-handed.
Oh, crazy.
Or the clap push-ups.
Yes. Oh, my God, crazy.
Yep. I could do a few of those, but, like, not a lot.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, I could do two.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Cousin Lurch, thanks for your service, and thanks for calling in that story, brother.
Not a problem. You guys have a good day.
You too, man.
You too. Thank you.
John in Fairfield.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a favor to ask before we jump into it. Can you ask Lamont next time you talk to him about the unfunded pension? Love to see him put some focus on the pension.
Here's the thing with the politicians. If you're not willing to wrestle them to the ground with their answer, it's not worth the time that it takes to hear the BS. And if you do wrestle them down to the ground and get a real answer and push them up against the wall, they don't come back.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? So I've just given up on trying to get real answers, you know?
Every time I hear we have more work to do here, more work to do there, I'm going, we have to fund the pension program, for the love of God.
I know, yeah. I know. You know, I'm going to leave it to smarter people than me to do it. I'm just tired of...
I get it.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, so here's the story. I was in the Navy from 89 to 93, Gulf War.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
I was on a battleship, which is like the Missouri, called the Wisconsin. I was assigned during the war when we were shooting to be inside of turret 2. And that's the 16-inch guns that shoot off because I was an electrician. And I'm going to tell you this story because, and Phil, you can help me out because my memory's not that great. Maybe fact check some of it. But
okay, I'm ready to help.
Back in the day, right before I got on board the Wisconsin, the USS Iowa had turret 2 blow up. I think 40 people were killed during that explosion. That's the reason why I was assigned to it, because they didn't exactly know what happened, and they wanted an electrician in there to just de-energize things if something was going wrong. Well, the Navy decided
April of 89 that happened.
Yes. The Navy decided that they would blame it on two sailors that were, one died, I believe, and the other one didn't, that were supposedly having an affair together. And this went on for a while until the family hired an independent, and it was covered by like 60 Minutes and everything, and they found out not only were these guys not gay or involved, but somebody just dropped a powder bag. And those powder bags are, you know, they're like 2 feet by 3 feet full of black powder, and it blew up the whole turret.
Oh, man.
Wow. Pretty volatile, yeah.
It's so gross that the Navy, the military, upper echelon people do this.
I know.
Right. Just say somebody dropped something. It's an accident.
Yeah, like, just say oops.
Make up this whole story. Yeah.
It's the fog of war. We made a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the family got permission to sue the military. You have to get permission from the military to sue them, and they won. But, you know, obviously being in the Gulf War, it was an easier war. I always think about those people that were involved in that because of my relationship with it. But also, you know, just going out on Veterans Day, you see some of the younger folks that have been in, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, and the tragedy that they saw. Somebody brought it up earlier, the 22 a day. That's a real number. Communities just have to do better to outreaching to the younger ones who really don't, you know, it's hard to get to them and hard to get to them to speak. But you can see it, how traumatized some of those folks are.
Yeah. Well, don't downplay the difficulties of the Gulf War. I mean, they put you in a turret thinking it might blow up. Okay. Yep. So, and you went in. And you went in.
You did.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, John.
I'm just saying the people that see the blood and the gore, you know, they have different, you know, I'm miles away from the action, even though I'm in it. You know, I have combat action, but I didn't see the devastation like they did.
Yeah, I hear you. I talk to Navy people, and they're like, man, you get a bed, you get meals, you're not digging a foxhole.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
It's, not bad.
And you, if you're ever thinking about signing up, young kids, the Navy will teach you a trait. I learned to be an electrician.
And that's what you're doing now?
For a living, but
yeah.
Now I'm a computer guy, but I use my trait all the time.
I could have used you last night.
Just keep in mind, Navy electricians don't snake things through walls. So,
gotcha.
Oh yeah, right. That's got to be something, living in a giant metal ship. And how badass is that when you roll into a place with a battleship? You know, there are people on the ground looking at you in a telescope saying, oh, yes.
You can actually hear them crack their pants.
This is like not good, not good, not good. Yeah.
Believe it or not, the Wisconsin and the Missouri, we painted over our numbers so that it would look like we were relentlessly shooting every 90 seconds for months, but we were swapping each other out after 5 days.
Oh, man.
And it is super intimidating because, those 16-inch guns are nothing. They're amazing. So
yeah.
So you guys did that just to appear that this ship just won't stop shooting.
We'll never run out.
Right.
Never run out.
Wow.
Never. That's why we did that act, yes. And they also had Tomahawks on board. Our captain was the Tomahawk commander of the whole war. Yeah, so it was quite a lot of fun.
Right, no pressure
and
now.
Just to make me feel super old, the ship is a museum down in Norfolk, Virginia now.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. There's oldies that we play here that I remember when I opened them and played them for the first time, so
right.
I got you.
I just got a new young lady that works for me that grew up in Norfolk, and I didn't know how to tell her.
Just ease it to her.
Yeah, don't. Hey, thanks for your service, John, and the kind words for the veterans. Thank you, brother. Garrett in Guilford.
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for doing it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I'm calling about my dad, but first I just want to say I saw this thing from an old veteran on TV yesterday. You know how we say thanks for your service, and, you know, that gets kind of like cliche, overused. I know a lot of guys appreciate it, but he said he prefers to hear thanks for my freedom instead.
Wow, that's
so
good.
You know, just kind of a cool way to mix it up today when we're all talking to people. Might be cool to do that. You know?
I love it.
Yeah. So my dad came from France. He came when he was 5 years old, grew up in the U.S. in Connecticut, and got drafted into Vietnam when he was around 18, and was a machine gunner, which, if anybody doesn't know, if you're on the front lines of the Army and you're a machine gunner, everybody's shooting at you, you know.
They want to take you out.
Exactly, because you're the guy doing the most damage.
That's right. You know? The snipers look for you.
Right. So we grew up hearing a lot of stories about that. And, you know, he had bullets hit like a cross on his helmet. You know, he had like, those kind of stories, you know. And when he was coming back from one injury, he ran over a mine with the guy who was going back. He got one Purple Heart for coming back for one injury, got half his arm blown off. But then on the way back from that injury, ran over a mine and got blown into a rice paddy and had a near-death experience from that. So, you know, the stories were just crazy. I know we all have them, you know, but the way that he dealt with it, and one thing that I really want to push is that a lot of guys use art as a way to deal with it, and the value of art therapy. I know they're doing that a lot at the VA. Bobby Blake is a great woman over there. My father became like a reclusive artist, and instead of like engaging with his family or resorting to drugs and alcohol, he learned how to paint. And we have a collection of like 30 of his oil paintings, one of which is in the National Veterans Hall of Fame. And, you know, finding venues to share that art and sharing it with your buddies and, you know, telling the story of war in like a non-gruesome way. I just want to point to that area as an important, you know, important venue for it. And also it's kind of funny because he's still wanted by the French government. But anyway, we all laugh at it in our family, you know, but he got exposed to Agent Orange and the government recognized that he died from lung cancer as a result of exposure to Agent Orange. So, but I just want to point to the value of art therapy. We're always looking for venues to share his art and the artwork of other veterans and his brothers. So
what was your dad's name?
John Dell.
Oh, John, thank you for my freedom wherever you are.
Okay, thanks, John.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, brother. Great call.
Yeah.
I got a text from Brown Roofing. Shout out to Brown Roofing General Manager Dennis, who proudly served in the United States Marine Corps. Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis.
Aaron in Shelton.
Well, I'll tell you a story of whiskey and mystics and men. Hey, morning, guys. How's everyone doing?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, so Aaron Ray's Tagliamonte, U.S. Army veteran. I worked at Apache Helicopters, former mechanic there.
Thank you.
You know, we all have a bunch of war stories, and I kind of want to segue from stories of the past of stories of the future. And I'd like to echo, you know, thank you for all the service members for, you know, ensuring our freedom. I like that. You know, that's something I want to adopt. Because that's great, because there's so many men and women that serve that they don't go unrecognized. That being said, you know, I'm working with Homes for the Brave music, you know, and thank you for guys for what you do, bring music and bring people together. But I'm working over there trying to set up a music room for them down there. They got a couple guitars, keyboard. I brought them an amp. I'm doing some sound acoustic stuff there. So the veterans can have a little place.
How cool is that?
To play music. Yeah, yeah. I'm a carpenter, I'm a craftsman, I'm a musician, all that stuff. So I'm trying to give back to the people that kind of need it. You know what I mean?
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
Just a side note here, talking about Homes for the Brave, their fourth annual Homes for the Brave 5K is happening today.
Oh, wow.
Oh, cool.
At Sherwood Island State Park in Westport. We'll link up at WPLR.com for more info if you want to participate. You got time to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I done enough running in my days, so I move slow these days. You know, I'm a bicentennial baby, not to that I'm that old, but you know, I'm creeping up there. I don't run anymore unless I have to.
Yeah, I'm being chased. I run. But,
yeah, about it. But my today to service some of the veterans that I've known is I'm actually sitting in the cemetery over on El Grasso Boulevard. One of my service members passed years and years ago that was like kind of a father to me. So I'm going to clean his gravestone. Then I'm heading over to West Haven where my grandfather was a Navy veteran. I'm going to go clean his headstone, too, and kind of honor the ones that have passed. Music is a big thing, and that's what I do, and that's my therapy, and that's what I'm trying to share. So, you know, please, like the guy before me, he had artists in there. Art is music. Art is poetry. Art is art. So there's a lot of veterans out there that search for things and can't find it because of, you know, the things they've seen and don't know where to talk about it. Well, express it. Express it with your art. Find people that are trying to help and, you know, help others. So that's my contribution. That's my story. I got a lot of other stories, but I don't want to, you know, have war stories and bring people to the past. But, thank you for letting me share a little bit.
And, no, thank you, man.
Godspeed to everyone.
Yeah, yes, thank you, Aaron.
Cool. Appreciate it.
Shout out to Sean Curran, a huge friend of the show, tribe member, and a PLR fan who fought in Afghanistan. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
John, Miller Place.
John. Good morning, crew. Good. I just want to say first, God bless all the veterans that have called in and veterans all over our country, and thank you for our freedom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I just wanted to spotlight my grandfather. Both of my grandfathers were World War II veterans. My one grandfather in particular, his name is Sergeant John Q. Barry. He was really like my hero growing up. My father died when I was really young, and he just stepped up at 76 years old and raised me. He was a great man. And yeah, he was very quiet about his service. He really didn't like, I bought him a World War II hat once as Father's Day. He wore it here and there, and he would put it in the back windshield of his car, but he really didn't like to brag about it. He was very humble about it. And, he passed away in 2008, and I had his original World War II, I guess you would call it the Class A uniform, like the original.
The dress?
And with the medals on there.
Right.
And he was very humble about what he did. I would ask him things, and he was in many different battles. I found out later.
You know what it is? They feel guilty that they made it back, and their friends didn't.
Yeah.
They don't want. They don't glorify the stories. They don't want to talk about it. They just feel weird that they made it. You know, that's what I got from talking to people. I can't talk about that and with certainty, but the sense that I get from talking to these guys and girls.
Yeah, he was an amazing guy. I mean, when he did open up, he told me stories of like boarding houses. He was in the infantry. He served in the 3rd Division under Patton, and he went through many different battles. I didn't know until a couple years ago. One of my friends, who's a social studies teacher, just recently, my students and I, we helped with him. The old Rocky Point train station is now a veterans memorial museum. And I had donated my grandfather's uniform, and I happened to have his honorable discharge papers, and I handed them to my buddy Rich, and he decoded them. He never told me when he was alive. He had three bronze stars, and he never sustained one injury in the war, despite being in the infantry and on the front lines. Guy was just such a cool guy.
Wow. Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys for taking my call.
To our veterans and active service members, thank you for our freedom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Veterans Day 2025. We're doing open phones here. Frank in Naugatuck.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, thank
you. Morning.
I wanted to just give some recognition to more than one person. I called it for my dad, but we had a big presence of aircraft that were made in Bridgeport, Swirsky Airport in Stratford, actually, the Corsair. That was a wonderful fighting machine they had. My aunt was like a Rosie Riveter there.
Really?
Cool. Yeah. And my best friend's father used to be a test pilot, and they used to do dogfights over Long Island Sound off the seawall in Lordship.
Wow.
Okay, can we talk about the test pilot? These are the people whose job it is to push the plane beyond its known capacity.
Right.
Exactly, yep.
That's brave.
It's a lot of balls.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, he still did that type of work after the war. I remember back in the 50s, I was, you know, probably, I don't know, 6-7 years old at the time, and during lunch hour he would still be testing planes. He would come over the neighborhood off North Bridgeport and start doing the dive bomb. You know, you hear the plane coming in, and he would over the house. Crazy, you know. But anyway, my Uncle Joe was over on the other side, and he was part of the Normandy D-Day adventure over there. He survived.
Wow.
Yeah. He could tell stories, let me tell you. He had such an effect on him from the war. He actually built a bomb shelter under his foundation when he came back.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people were touched by that war. But also, thanks to the veterans and everything, this isn't a plug for a company or anything, but my contribution to Vets is I bought a bunch of bracelets made by the Hero Company, and they're pretty sharp-looking masculine bracelets, and they give a portion of every sale to a companion dog for Vets.
Oh, that's cool. How much of a portion?
I'm not sure, but they've given a good
somebody
amount
always
away.
Asks, when someone says, hey, we're going to do, you know, a lunch and we're going to give a dollar from every $25 lunch, I'm like,
yeah.
Well, who's benefiting more here? I think you are with the ad exposure. But
I guess we can always Google it, right?
Yeah.
But they're nice. They're only like $34. But
now you're sounding like a commercial.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get back to my dad. Thank God I almost wasn't here, to tell you the truth. My dad was in the Army, and they were going over to Japan after they had already dropped the bomb. He was part of the occupational forces over there, kind of like Iraq and stuff like that. But anyway, they were still shooting at him when they got over there. But he was on a transport going over there in the Pacific, and his captain was exhausted from going back and forth and back and forth all over the place. So he actually faked engine trouble and pulled into one of the islands. And the other transport troop transporters all got blown up by the Japanese subs.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. So that was quite a gift.
That's a divine intervention.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
It really was.
Wow.
Yeah. And my dad was a photographer for the Bridgeport Post. People may have seen his name over the years. He passed away about 10 years ago, but with Frank DiCervo.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was over there, the official U.S. Army photographer. And he was at the war trials with Hirohito, and he actually sent a photo back. I don't know how they got it back to the States. It was published in the paper, the war trial for Hirohito. And we didn't have fax machines in those days, right? So they actually had to fly it over here, I think. But, yeah, it was a lot of stories I heard from him, you know, but one of the best stories he told me was he was over there, like I said, in the occupational forces, and General MacArthur had his headquarters over there in Tokyo. And you were not allowed to take a picture of the general and his family when they're out. And he had his wife and kids there, you know, the general did. And they came out of church one day, and my father was standing on the corner there, you know, excuse me. And the general said, "Soldier, what are you doing just standing there? Snap our picture." So if you ever see any picture of General MacArthur in Japan with his family, that's my dad's picture.
No kidding.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So,
now, I wonder if he hesitated a little bit, like, "Oh man, is this a trick?"
Right.
Yeah, he gets thrown in the brink.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's testing. All right. Hey, Frank, thanks for the stories, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Teacher Dan, you're going to wrap it up.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me on. Thanks for all the veterans, for all their sacrifices, and for all of our freedoms. Yeah, I have a traveling museum. I go all over New England, and I teach in Waterbury. I got involved in this because my grandfather would tell me stories as I was growing up about being on Christmas Island, fighting the Japanese, getting hand-to-hand combat. But the story that really got me, which made me want to interview veterans, was he would tell me a story. He cut these coconuts up, and he said, you know, coconuts everywhere on the island. And I cut one up, and it wasn't ripe, so I put sugar in it. And I forgot about it for a few weeks in my tent. And I smelt this something sweet. And he goes over to it, and it ended up fermenting. So he started fermenting coconut liquor on this island. And he said, you know,
he made rum.
he was making liquor for all the guys.
Nice.
And on top of that, he also made a gambling ring, and you could come in and for a pack of cigarettes, get some coconut liquor and get in the card games. But he made fishing rods out of bamboo, and he was fishing in the lagoon, and he said, I caught a fish, and it took me an hour and a half, 2 hours to pull in, and it was as big as me. He said the thing weighed almost 90 pounds. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, big fish story, because everybody always tells these exaggerated stories.
Yeah.
So he says, you know, I cast the line back out, and I caught another one just as big. And he said, you know, I didn't know what to do with it, so I thought the best thing to do was cook it up for the officers. So I cooked it up for the officers. We had some coconut liquor. And the next day I woke up to the sound of people getting sick. And he said, oh, I thought I got the officers sick. Come to find out, all the enlisted guys who ate the rations that night came down with dysentery.
Oh.
So the officers loved my grandfather for cooking up this fish for them. The enlisted guys hated my grandfather for not sharing it with them.
Right,
right.
But, you know, it's this big fish story. And being a little kid, I was rummaging around in his house, and I found a photo of him. And there he is, holding these two big fish.
Wow.
And I said, you know what?
It's like the movie.
The stories he told me were true stories.
Yeah.
And I just loved that because it got me interested in talking to these guys, because so many of them didn't want to talk, or I hate to say it, some families weren't interested in the history of what they did and their experiences, but it got me interested in this. And I've been blessed to have known a lot of vets. One of them, his name is Kaji Haruta. He served in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, and it was an all-Nisei unit, all Japanese-Americans. And before the war, his family owned this huge strawberry farm. And after Pearl Harbor, the government came, rounded them all up, took their home, took all their possessions, and they lived in an internment camp.
Yeah.
And the internment camp was a horse stable. They lived where the horse lived. And there was a few families in each little stable. And government came up to him in 1943 and said, you know what, if you want to get out, enlist in the Army. And he enlisted. And he went to Italy, and he fought with this unit. And it was the most decorated unit for their size and for their length of service.
Wow.
21 guys out of 12,000 got the Medal of Honor. Wow. 1,500 of them were in internment camps before they joined. And I love this story because these guys were being treated like animals, yet they felt their patriotic duty to a country that was pretty much kicking them.
Yeah.
And they joined the service and became the most decorated unit out of everybody.
Yeah, they didn't just
go.
World
War II.
Yeah, no, they succeeded, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't just go. They went in 100%.
And then in 1960, when I think it was the 60s.
I actually don't think I have time for another story.
No. The government offered him money for all the land that they took from him. And he said, I don't want the money. I'm not interested in it.
Wow.
I did my duty. That was it.
Wow. Well, Teacher Dan, we're going to link up to your traveling museum on WPLR.com. It's very cool what you do, man. It's a great honor to all those who served.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And you guys have a wonderful day.
Thank you, brother.